When I talk to my class and I get to the example of talk shows, one of the individuals I cite as to, hey, you should listen to how this guy does talk shows. He knows it better than anybody. It's Jody McDonald, who is going to join us to talk about the great Tom Seaver. Jody Mac, great to have you with us. Always great appreciation for your work and great to have you back with us.
Appreciate hopping on board, and I appreciate the compliment. You mean I haven't forgotten how to do it over 32 years?
Yeah, I think you got it down pretty good by now, pal. You have yourself in a different spot than everybody else in life because your dad, Joe McDonald, was with the Mets. So for you, what was it like growing up around a Mets team that had Tom Seaver?
Well, he was my favorite player. Everybody has, when they're of that age, and I say that age, I'm talking 6 or 7 through 14 or 18. Some guys stay diehard fans when they get to high school. They get into other things. But when you're a grade school kid, between 2nd grade and 8th grade, that's when you find the people that you latch on to. These are the guys that you're going to look up to forever. And with me, Tom Seaver was at the top of the list because he was the best player on the team that I cared most about, as if I had a choice, since my father was working for them. But it wasn't a hard choice. I was a diehard Mets fan growing up. He was the franchise, and he was my favorite player, and it wasn't really easy when your father has to be the guy who's got to pull the trigger on trading the franchise player.
Yeah, absolutely. But also being in the spot, it's a little bit different for the youngster that sits at home or sits up in Section 22 watching Tom Seaver and they're the favorite player. You, as a youngster, would have contact with somebody like that, so they can ruin your image if it's the wrong way. It sounded like being around him enhanced your image of him.
Not really. I went in the clubhouse. I knew all the players just to say hi, but I didn't really know any of them individually, including Tom Seaver. I got one really cool picture of me and Willie Mays that my father wanted to take when Willie joined the Mets in 1973 that is a collectible that I have kept over all of these years. But I told this story last night, both of the last two nights when I was on the air about Tom Seaver. When I was just 14, I was getting ready to move on to high school and play basketball and baseball at a higher level. A couple of my buds wanted to start weightlifting. None of us had ever weightlifted. We were 13, 14 years old. And I mentioned it to my father, and he said, "Don't do anything till I tell you." Okay. He brings home a set of instructions as to how to lift weights, as put together by Tom Seaver. Because my father always appreciated Tom and the fact that he did lift weights, but only 10-pound dumbbells. No power lifting, no bench pressing, nothing like that. And it was working damn good for Tom Seaver to make him one of the best pitchers in baseball. My father said, "I suggest you use Tom Seaver's way of lifting weights." And I began immediately thereafter, and I still have the sheet of instructions as to how to use that 10-pound dumbbell. So that tells you the kind of pedestal that I put Tom Seaver on, because he was as good as he was. He was a New York Met. He was the guy who was willing to share his weightlifting procedures with a 14-year-old kid of the general manager of the team. So, yes, it was a tough day when we found out the other day that Tom had passed, but his last several years have been difficult on him. And it was time for him to take the big mound in the sky.
Yeah, no, with dementia, that's tough. I know I lost my father to dementia along the way, so I understand exactly how they would feel about that. You mentioned the trade to Cincinnati. New York can be a very hard town media-wise, especially with competing newspapers, and Dick Young would have the ability to be very tough on certain individuals. How tough was Dick Young on Tom Seaver, also on Nancy Seaver, and did it play any role at all in the Mets finally trying to making a move?
Oh, it absolutely did. Yes, Dick Young took the side of the Mets in that they wanted to keep Tom Seaver's contract negotiations private, as 99.9% of sports contracts were at that time. Some of your younger listeners won't understand that because they've only been following sports for 20 years, and all contracts are negotiated through the media these days. That was not the case in 1977, and the Mets took major umbrage with the fact that Tom was attempting to negotiate and leaking info out to other writers in New York who have long since been forgotten. But Dick Young took the stance of questioning the franchise, and that did not go over well, and that's why it's been remembered as long as it has, and it certainly was not forgotten by the Met ownership, who told my father a week before the trade deadline, get the best trade that you can for Tom Seaver, but we can't continue to have this, our business being done in the media here in town. Tom wants to be traded. He said he wanted to be traded. We are going to accommodate him. Joe, please make the best deal that you can, but we want Tom Seaver off the team by the trade deadline, and that's just what my father did.
Would that have been Donald Grant?
M. Donald Grant was the president of the team.
Yeah.
He was the right-hand man of Linda DeRolay, who was Joan Payson's daughter. Joan Payson was the owner of the team in 69 when they won their World Series. She passed and passed the team on to her daughter, and Donald Grant was the right-hand man of Linda DeRolay. So those were the people that my father was meeting with right up until the trade deadline, and they had him call Tom Seaver hours before the trade deadline and say, Tom, would you still prefer to be traded? And when he said yes, they told my father, pull the trigger on the deal, and although he was in a meeting with the board of directors, he was excused when they took their vote as to whether they were going to actually do this or not, because they knew that he was not necessarily for it, and they wanted to get it done. So when he was called back into the room, they told him, it is a go. Please get the best that you can for Tom Seaver.
In the next couple of weeks afterward, just on a personal basis, how tough was it for your father to deal Tom Seaver, just on a personal basis?
They were pretty good friends. People are rekindling this tale again now, how he became a Met. He was drafted by the Atlanta Braves. And it was a, again, times they are changing, it was a January draft. They now only have one draft per year. Back then they had two. And if you drafted a player in the January draft, you had up until his next season started, until he played a game in his next season, to sign him. Well, Tom Seaver played a game for USC. The Atlanta Braves said that it was only an exhibition game. They judged that it was an actual regular season game. They were making up the fact that it was an exhibition game after the fact, and he signed a contract with the Braves after playing that game. So they deemed the contract unacceptable. So they did something that they had never done before. They had a lottery. Any team that wanted to enter and honor the contract and the numbers therein that the Braves had given Seaver could put their name in for a drawing to get his rights. Only three teams did: the Phillies, the Indians, and the Mets. And my father was the one who had to sell the general manager, George Weiss. He was the GM at the time before my father became general manager. This is an investment worth making to get in bidding, and they might not have even got it. They had a 1-3 shot. Sure enough, their name got pulled out. They signed Seaver, and as they say, the rest is history.
All right, this will be one of that era to this era. But Tom Seaver would go out and take the ball, and he expected to throw a complete game. Now, it didn't always, but he expected to the night he got the ball. Juan Marichal was like that. Steve Carlton was like that. We can go through a long list of guys. Bob Gibson was like that all the way through. What is it in... And they didn't experience arm trouble. Who experienced arm trouble? At least we didn't know about it. What is it about then where starters thought about complete games like Tom Seaver, didn't experience arm trouble, where today you've got four or five inning guys, openers, and they experience arm trouble? What's happened?
Maybe overtraining, that they work some of these kids too hard at an early age, that they're pitching on travel teams and Babe Ruth League teams and high school, although high school is becoming less and less important with every passing year. It's all about getting to showcases and being able to catch a scout's eye. I think they've pushed the pitchers too much from too young an age. and they're paying the price at it when they get into their 20s and when they get to a high minor league level or a major league level. And the established protocol now is to cut them back rather than build them up. I'm not sure that it's working. There are more injuries. I understand when you put hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars into draftees, signing bonuses and the like, you want to be uber protective of them, but sometimes you end up just hurting them by not using them enough. It's a different strategy. I don't know if we're ever going back to the old strategy of where more is better. Right now, less is better, but I think the injuries that you're talking about kind of make the case for maybe there's a reason for rethinking the way pitchers are handled these days.
To you, what is the legacy of Tom Seaver?
Agreed. He was just a stone-cold gamer who wanted to pitch every inning of every game that he started. He never wanted to come off the mound. And it's unfortunate that the game has changed. It's added a little bit more strategy, so as we as a fan can have a little bit more fun, second-guessing what a manager does. But the days of the dominant starting pitcher going nine just don't exist anymore.
They don't. And as a lifelong Mets fan, he was always known as the franchise. He'll always be known as the franchise. So in New York Mets lore, he'll be somebody that won't be forgotten. What are some elements that should never be forgotten about Tom Seaver?
Well, you touched on one, the fact that he wanted to finish every single game. I think, again, if you're looking for a reason to look back and say, well, no, maybe older was better. Tom Seaver was a drop-and-drive pitcher. He got most of his capacity to get the ball up there in the 90s to the plate because of his lower half and his ability to just throw himself at the plate. The other night when the Mets and Yankees played, all the players specifically put dirt on their right knee because that's the way Tom Seaver used to pitch. He used to just hurl himself at home plate. Now in Major League Baseball, everybody wants pitchers who are 6'5", 6'6", and work with downward plane, that the angle from coming so far above is that much more important. I think they've shied away from letting pitchers use their lower half and having the leg strength to be able to get the ball up there at the miles per hour needed. So just something else that I think Tom Seaver fans should always be proud of and hope that someday it returns to be an important part of the game. And although the franchise was one of the nicknames Tom was certainly known for, for me, Tom Terrific will be his number one nickname of all time. Even though Tom Brady might be the greatest quarterback of all time, that's his GOAT status. He can lay claim to that. I'm not sure Tom Seaver is the greatest pitcher of all time, but he was Tom Terrific first before Brady ever showed up in New England. So I'm sorry that nickname is taken, Mr. Brady.
Exactly. And by the way, I've referenced leg drive to the plate so often. I've talked about Nolan Ryan, who also came out of the Mets system as well. So I've said, same thing. You know, Nolan Ryan's key was his lower body. It was not his upper body, which was terrific to begin with, but the way he drove to the plate. Well, you know what? After 32 years, you're still a darn good talk show host. And you know what? We found out you're a heck of a guest.
I can BS with the best of them, no matter what role I'm playing. BS BS, and it's not as hard as some people think, but it is hard when you lose someone that you specifically grew up rooting for and was your favorite player. Anybody who wanted to get me on this week to talk about Tom Seaver, it was my pleasure. So it was my pleasure being on with you this afternoon.
Thanks, Jody. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, whoever Girardi gave you as the Kentucky Derby winner, don't listen to him. Enforceable is going to win the Kentucky Derby.
You know what? Because I've had you on before talking about horse racing. Jody knows the ponies. Okay, Dick was going through boxing, like what he was going to box, and there were a couple of long shots in there. So,
Kids the Law is probably going to win, and we're all going to regret it if we try and beat him. But I would say Enforceable is the long shot with the best shot to run in the exacta with him if your listeners are thinking about playing the Derby tomorrow.
I love it. I'm glad he slipped it in. Great job, Jody. Thank you so much, my friend.
You got it. My pleasure. Appreciate it.